The Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Daddy, las mamas están aquí para darles información, música y diversión con el show de Mujeres Bravas, los domingos desde las 12 hasta la 1:30 de la tarde.
El que se quede en su silla sentado, que sea castigado por no saber gozar.
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and the quiet zen time of setting them up and putting them away. I'm your host, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing good. I like that little intro about the zen. That's kind of nice.
Sounds nice.
Very zen.
Today is also the first day of our Camp KBOO summer membership drive, focusing on the community and making Camp KBOO summer memories. To support, grab a spot next to the fire and start toasting up some marshmallows, then go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to become a monthly sustaining member today. Help us reach our fundraising goal of $50,000. We're pleased to welcome Amy Bayo, owner of the Portland-based Pink Tiger Games. Amy's been designing games since 2017 with a focus on making sweet, kind games to connect people. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, why don't we start with, how did you get into the hobby?
I never saw myself as a game designer. It actually came as a huge surprise to me. I was standing in my kitchen in May of 2017, making some lunch for my son, and the whole idea for my first game popped into my head. I was like, you know, we all think we know so much about each other all the time, especially because of social media, and what if there was a game and every card said, I know, that every card would have an I know statement, and you'd have to guess how other players would answer. And the game has not changed from that moment of the idea.
Well, that's an impressive start. Did you... were you into games before you made your first game, or was this like you, it wasn't your thing and then just popped in your head?
I love games, but I never saw myself as a game designer.
So how do you go from I have an idea to I'm making this idea for people to play?
Yeah, it was really just a matter of, you know, when you just are so inspired. I just felt like I was just hit with that bolt of lightning, like this is something I have to make. It wasn't even a choice. I even, at that moment, I told my son, I was like, hey, you know, I just had an idea for a game. And he was like, what? Because he knows me really well. And he was like, what are you talking about? A video game? And I said, no, a card game. And he was like, what? And I told him the concept really quickly. And he said, that sounds really cool. And I was like, My 13-year-old just said, that sounds really cool. Interesting. Okay. And so I waited a couple of days before I told my husband, because I knew I would need, you know, some backup, some help, some editing. Like, I already knew that. And I had started writing notes in my phone. My phone notes section is just filled with thoughts and ideas. And I started writing down or typing in all of the things that we talk about that are, you know, silly to serious, you know, the silly food preferences to deeper life stuff. And started writing, told my husband about it about 2 days in, and he was like, I don't know how to make a game. And I was like, but we know people. We can figure this out.
So, I guess, what is this first game called?
The first game is called You Think You Know Me, and I ran the Kickstarter for it in September of 2017, and it came out in March of 2018. And it's had a beautiful long life in February, March of 2023. It was Barnes & Noble's Game of the Month, which was a huge honor.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it really has had just like this wonderful trajectory of life. It was featured in a gift bag that Disney put together for the Bachelorette TV show. Just all this random, really fun things.
How long did it take you to go from, like you said, from thinking of the game to getting to the Kickstarter point? Was there a point where you were like, I'm gonna make a game, but I'll put it on the back burner, or was it just steamrolling it ahead?
I was like a little race car driver. Yeah. I knew it was a marathon of game design, was hoping it was in my future, but this one was a sprint. It was just a really solid idea. As soon as I started playtesting it with friends and friends of friends, because I knew I had to play test it with people I didn't know, and watch them play and walk away from them as they played, all the things that, I don't know, I didn't know what I was doing, but instinctually I knew I needed to do those things. I wasn't part of the board gaming community at all at that point. I was just sort of, you know, I'd hand-drawn cards, these little pieces of paper, and met at the by-and-by, you know, and just played. And when people loved playing, I was just hooked. I was absolutely hooked. So that was in May of 2017. By September 2017 was the Kickstarter. So it was fast forward. Yeah.
So what part of, like, you've got your idea for the game, you make your game, but I imagine you still don't think, I am a game designer. Do you think, I have another game idea, I want to keep doing this? Like, how did that develop?
Well, by summertime, I had an idea for my second game, for Flatter Me, which is a compliment battle card game. So I knew I wanted to make that too, but I was like, okay, one thing at a time. So I started writing that, but sort of put it on the back burner. And Flatter Me was inspired by the little, like, sweet texts that my friends and I would all send to each other, these big group texts, you know, just really, they were encouraging and kind and silly and fun. And so I knew I wanted to make a game out of that, those beautiful, sweet, funny things that we all said to each other.
That's really cute. So you thought of your second game while you were making your first.
Yes.
Has that always been the way, while you're making a game, another one pops into your head? You never had that point where you're just stuck with a blank piece of paper being like, I gotta make another game, what do I do?
Yeah, they really have overlapped. And my reading has had a big influence on my games too. I love to read about neuroscience and therapeutic, you know, things and memoirs and religion and death, and so all of these things sort of layer into what inspires me and what I'll be making next. And what's funny now is I'm just now getting ready to push manufacture on my seventh game, and it's almost like there's a little Easter egg inside every game that each game, like, has a little footprint, if you will, you know, a little trail of breadcrumbs through every game that they've all inspired each other, and you can go backwards and forwards, and it's wild.
It's the auteur theory here. but do you have, like, an overall design ethos for your games?
I do, yeah. Everything has to be really easy to play, really simple. I want everyone to be able to open the box and not even read the rule booklet if they don't want to. I want you to interact with the cards. I think of making games as making art. And so it's all about easy rules, quick to learn, easy to play. Anyone can play. I try to stay away from anything that is, you know, hyper trendy. I want my games to be as evergreen as possible, which I know is a lofty goal, but that's something I try for as well. So those are some of my design ethos.
All your games are very bright, colorful. You said positive. How do you like find your artists to make sure they come to how you would want them to come out on the shelves?
Yeah, I love working with artists. The first game, You Think You Know Me, I actually did myself with my husband. I just sat down with color crayons and I drew on pieces of paper and I handed them over to him and I was like, this is what I'm thinking of. And then he brought it to life for me because he is better at that stuff. And then for each game, all but one of the artists is from Oregon. And so that's been really fun too. And I also always work with folks who have never designed games before. So they don't do art for games. So I hope that helps them stand out too, because they're coming to designing a game, doing the art for the game with new eyes too. They're like, oh, it's a game. Cool. I've never done art for a game. And they're all women. And so Lost for Words, a game of untranslatable feelings. That artist, she is from the Dominican Republic and she lives in LA. And she works with like big brands like Coach and stuff, and she does private events where she does lettering. So when I saw her lettering, I was like, it's perfect and it's beautiful for Lost for Words. And then Flatter Me is an artist named Ashley Goldberg here in Portland, Oregon, and she works again with a bunch of different brands. And then Lisa Congdon did Cloud Nine, a game of wonderful things. I'm gonna forget people. Rabbit, a game of superstitions, is a local tattoo artist, Kirsten Holiday. And then my latest game, Pet Names, a game of endearments, is Chris Evans, and she's incredible. She's also a professor. Did I forget? Did I say all seven? Oh gosh, I hope I did.
How do you go about finding people like that? Not only suit the game, but just finding people in general. Is there like a sort of audition process, or like
they're either all of the artists have either been my friends or have become my friends? So I know everyone in real life except for Rosalie Monegro, who lives in LA. But yeah, I reach out to people that I admire, and I hope that they want to work with me too. And so far, it's been really lucky and wonderful.
You're just like, I found someone, I want to be your friend, now you're my friend, and make my game for me.
I love finding people that I admire and admire their work. And I just think there's a vibe, you know? Like, I want to know you. And luckily, if it's reciprocal, then, you know, we're good to go.
I mean, that's just a lovely way about going about games, about going about your life and things. It's just going on nicely, you're done.
Yeah. So your games are card-based games, lots and lots of cards. What's the development process and playtesting process like? And specifically me, I'm just curious about, like, how do you know when you're done making new cards, and how do you know which cards should be cut, especially given that, like, it might be several playtesting sessions till you get to all of the cards even once.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I write a lot. For You Think You Know Me, I wrote, you know, 2,000 cards. For Rabbit, a game of superstitions, I researched, again, like probably over 2,000 superstitions and wrote the cards. Lost for Words, I could just write and write and write. So when it comes down to it, they all go into spreadsheets. You have to then find if there's anything that's too repetitive in feeling or in the way that it's written. For Rabbit, also I just cut anything that was mean or gross or cruel or too, you know, violent or not kind to children, you know, like, I think I left one in there. It's about a damselfly that likes to sew children's mouths shut if they're not nice or something. But I think that's the only one that I left in there because, yeah, nothing is cruel to animals. Luckily, my husband is my editor. Andy Bayo is my husband. He runs ExoFest here in Portland that wrapped last summer. And he was also the first CTO of Kickstarter. And he's an exceptionally good writer. And he'll totally cringe if he hears me say that, but it's true. He's an amazing writer. He's an amazing editor. And he has a tendency to go ahead and just look right at me and be like, but does it fit the game? Is this, you know, is this something you really want? And it's either yes or no. He gets me to think about it. And, you know, of course, final say is always up to me, though.
I'm sorry.
Do you set out knowing how many cards you want in a game? Or is it just, you just, like you said, you just keep going to you for like, eh, that's enough.
It was funny. Well, You Think You Know Me came out around the same time that, like, Cards Against Humanity was enormous, and so it was Super Fight, and they were both 500 cards. So I was like, yeah, I want 500 cards, and I want it to last a long time. I want people to play for a super long time and not, you know, come across the same card. And then Flatter Me, I knew I wanted it to be smaller, so that's 250 cards. Still a lot, I know. Like, to me, that's tiny, though. It's itty-bitty game. Mm. And then everything else is over 300 cards in the rest of the collection. And no, I don't ever know how many. I knew, of course, how many I wanted for You Think You Know Me, but everything else was, like, paring down to, like, actually get it to fit in a box. In fact, this game I'm working on right now that's going to be manufactured, I wrote like 800 for, and and I got it down to 400. And yeah, Andy is like, you need to cut more. And I was like, I will not cut more.
Well, and that was, you kind of mentioned on, I was going to ask, like, do you have to worry about like the standard box size, or like if they have to make like a box that's non-standard, or like think about how many cards fit on a sheet so you're not having a, but you're maximizing your space on the sheet when it's getting printed out?
Yes, I have asked those questions too, and you know, working with my manufacturer is just a breeze. Like, and they're really fun with, you know, designing different kinds of boxes for me, and yeah, haven't really worried about it. Oh, I just remembered who I forgot. My game Hurt Party, a game of bad apologies that came out last year. Agnes Barton Sabo, aka Betty Turbo, she was my artist for that one. And then I Love Cake, and it's my first game that looks like food. It looks like a cake. It's really, really cute. Anyway, I can't forget her. I knew I forgot somebody. Sorry.
Awesome. We're going to do a quick reset, and then James, if you have another question, we'll go to you. So you're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with James, and this is Winner's Bias, a show about the board gaming hobby. We're talking to Amy Bayo about designing and releasing games for her company, Pink Tiger Games. Before we get back to our conversation, I just want to remind everyone that today is the first day of our Camp KBOO Summer Membership Drive, focusing on the community and making memories. Visit us at kboo.fm, and while you're there, be sure to click on that donate button. James?
So you brought up Cards Against Humanity with, like, how many cards you wanted to make. Mm. With Cards Against Humanity, they have hundreds of different expansions. Have you ever wanted to do that with any of your games? Like, could you, if you make like 300 more cards than you can fit in, did you ever thought just make an expansion for that to release later?
I thought I would be a person who made expansions. In fact, I did a You Think You Know Me expansion. It was my only failed Kickstarter. And it was in November of 2018, because I thought, and maybe I hope people will remember this time, I thought that, you know, you did your game and then you did like an adult version, or, you know, like that's what you would do. So I did the Peach Pack for You Think You Know Me, and it was like very adult cards. They're all really funny. And I had fun playing it with my friends, but it was a reach for me to even write. And what was interesting is my audience spoke back on that immediately. They were like, we love You Think You Know Me, but like, we don't really want this kind of game from you. I did acquire some new followers because of when I was running the Peach Pack, and they were like, we want this. And I was like, not enough of you do, sorry. And people still ask me about it, which is super cool. So I got the expansion bug, and then I kind of just lost it. I still have expansions in my notes for a few of the games, but like nothing that really calls to me. And then one of my bigger buyers, when I presented the collection to them, they were like, oh, it's so nice that you don't have a bunch of expansions. And I was like, oh, interesting. Okay, well, if I'm not called to do expansions and they are not super stoked on them, then great, we are in agreement, you know. But you know, with that all said, I do make whatever, like, really tugs at my heart. I have to really love what I'm doing. I follow my heart with each thing that I do. But I think that's what was so important about the Peachback, is that I did go out of my comfort zone. I did think was what was expected of me, which I will never do again.
You had mentioned when we talked prior that you make one game a year. Mm. And so, kind of related to that discussion of the expansions, that designing new expansions would interfere with that sort of schedule of making one game a year. So is that sort of also an area that you're like, yeah, I could work on that, but I got this new stuff anyway, and I'd rather focus on that?
Yeah, I think so. I do really love to work on the new, and I love to work with the new artist. I draw everything out myself, how I want things, you know, to look and the feeling. And I put a lot of heart into everything I make. I always say that they're all pieces of my heart, so I don't like to skimp on anything. I don't see expansions in the future. I don't know, but never say never.
I mean, I like that you were able to still talk about that, because, like, we've had people on the show before that's made games or have podcasts, and it's always success stories. You don't really hear about things that don't work for you, but it's great that it didn't work for you, and you're still going, and you're like, yeah, that's not for me, but it's still positive of you, and it's just lovely to hear.
Thank you. I think, gosh, I mean, a million things go wrong all the time, you know? Truly, so many things go wrong. I think that's why I made you think you know me too, because we show the shiny things on social media. But yeah, it was definitely a very tough time. It was really hard to not have the Kickstarter succeed and to go through it all. It was also really, really important.
Yeah. So there's kind of an arc in board gaming where you, like, get into games with, like, lighter games, gateway games, and then there's a lot of people have this expectation. It's like, okay, but you're going to leave those behind and go on to, like, the real crunchy, heavy stuff, and then you'll be a real board gamer. Do you find you have to fight the perception that party games or easy-to-learn games are only for new people entering the hobby?
Well, I definitely don't want to fight about it. I mean, if people are open to party games and see that being simple is very challenging, then I think they understand where I'm coming from. And what I've designed isn't just like, oh, I just made this on a Sunday, you know, with some paper and my printer, and aren't I clever? No, like, it takes a long time to, like, get it right and get the balance right and get the cards right and make the rules as easy as possible. So, yeah, I have no dog in the fight. Yeah.
And that's one thing that you do hear a lot, is, like, one of the hardest things to do in board gaming is have a streamlined rule set, because you can always add rules and make it like, oh yeah, that'll clarify this thing. But, like, just having a clean rule set is incredibly hard.
Yeah. The one thing I didn't do in a regret I have is in Cloud9, in the rule booklet in the Game of Wonderful Things, I wish there was one or two more pages in the rule booklet, because it's just a little pamphlet that showed you how to set up the game. So, you know, again, we learn things all the time, that it wasn't as clear as it could be. And a picture goes a long way.
Do you write your own rules? Do you have someone, does Andy review your rules? And have you ever thought about, like, I'm too close to this, I should have someone else write my rules?
Yes. So I write the rules, and I write them so badly, you would think somebody put them in a snow globe, shook them up, and then dumped them. So that's how I don't think in those streamlined ways. I know what I mean, but I don't write rules well. And I think it's such a talent. So, no, Andy writes them after I am like, no, it's like this, it's like this. And he's like, yeah, I got it. And then we go over and go over and go over. And this last game, not last game, but the game that will hopefully come out this year, knock on wood, Pet Names, Game of Endearments, we took it over to a friend's house here in Portland, and he has worked in comics and games, and I just had printed out the rules for his kid and their friends to play, and I just handed the kids, the 10 to 13 year olds, the rules, and I was like, I'm going to watch you. And they're like, cool, you know, and read the rules. And so I could start to see like where they were failing, where they were working. And then in the meantime, my friend went ahead once they were in a nice flow and playing, he took the rules and he just started jamming on his laptop and he cleaned them all up and made them even more beautiful. And so in that moment, I was like, oh, I've done myself a disservice by not having a third party even have a look, because Andy and I are so close to the whole thing the whole time. It's a great question. Yeah.
So you mentioned pet names, mm-hmm. and launching a new Kickstarter. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that new game?
Yeah, Pet Names, A Game of Endearments is 400 mini cards put inside a plush fox bag that we're calling Charlie. And Charlie the fox comes in a box with a windowed box. You can see Charlie's face smooshed against the packaging. It's very cute. And then the art is all by Chris Evans. She goes by Kanoko Gallery on the internet, on Blue Sky and Instagram. And so in Pet Names, you are making cute, sweet little nicknames for all other players. And it is a judge mechanism. So you go around the table, you make your nicknames for each player, and then that player gets to choose which one is their favorite. And if three of yours gets chosen, then you are the winner.
Have you, so you've used Kickstarter mm-hmm. to make all your games mm-hmm. come to life. Have you noticed a difference from using Kickstarter in 2017 and using it now?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, things change. The platform has changed a little bit. I still love it for the most part, and I'll still go back to use it every time. In 2017, I mostly used it, 100% used it, to fund the game. And then now, in the past few years, I run Kickstarters primarily for marketing and pre-orders. It's so helpful to have those backers support, to know that the game is interesting to people too. It's sort of like market research as well. And I love filling out a Kickstarter. Like, I really do. From making the video, to taking all the photos, to describing your game and your story, and thinking about your budget. All of these things, like, it's almost like a built-in little business plan that you get to use Kickstarter for. I love it.
And two weeks ago, we talked to Rick and Mary Hal about fulfilling their Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And have you found, like, doing the back-end fulfillment part to be sort of a natural fit for your skill sets? Or have you needed to get, like, help with that? Because we talked about then, designing and fulfillment are two very different skill sets to have.
Yeah, my journey with that has been really interesting too, because in 2018, my games were shipped from a manufacturer in China directly to the East Coast of the U.S., where at the time, Cards Against Humanity owned a company called Black Box, and they were a fulfillment company. So they took on You Think You Know Me, and if they liked your game, then they, like, you know, would broadcast it out to other retailers. So I was able to get a ton of stores that year in 2018, and then Uncommon Goods picked it up, You Think You Know Me that spring as well, and then they put it in the catalog that holiday of 2018. So it all just was very big and all happened really fast. And Black Box was amazing to be able to just have all my games in one place, and I'd get, you know, sales reports. So it was lovely. But then the pandemic happened. So in 2020, from 2020 to, gosh, 2022, all of my games were shipped from China to my home. So here comes the giant truck down my street. When the pallets would come off the truck, I invited people over. We'd fill the house with games. It was chaotic and funny. And I knew by, I think it was like November 2021, Rabbit Rabbit arrived like 2 months late again, because it was just a terrible time. And it was a rainy day. And I had like 12 friends come over, and we filled my house with games. And I was like, okay, I have to get a distribution partner. I have to change this. So, yeah. So for the past few years, I've been working with a big consolidator who then distributes out to everybody. So now it's just a matter of spreadsheets. But I did fulfill the Kickstarter for Flatter Me myself and for Rabbit Rabbit myself.
So something that's happening in the world right now is the tariffs. We can't get away from it.
We wish we could.
Could you make card games? And you would think card games are usually made from paper, and that could be made in the USA. Has tariffs affected you as much as you might think?
Yes, tariffs, if they remained at the 145%, it would begin the beginning of the end for Pink Tiger Games. Like, it just wouldn't work out anymore, because there are places to make card specific games in the US, but the quality is fine, but it's not like the how good it is with my Chinese manufacturers, and the cost is so expensive. So, for example, gosh, I haven't had a quote for a long time from an American manufacturer, but it's usually four times the cost or more than the Chinese manufacturer, which means it doesn't work. It's untenable. Can't make that work. Can't make numbers like that work.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's just about all the time that we have for today. Amy, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us. It's been a delight.
Before we go, please promote yourself and where people can find your new game and you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. You can find me at pinktigergames.com. I'm Pink Tiger Games everywhere. Blue Sky, Instagram, TikTok. And you can find my games at most of the wonderful game stores in Portland, Oregon, as well as Amazon, Necessary Evil, and Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. Very happy to be in all the different places. And my Kickstarter for Pet Names, A Game of Endearments, will hopefully be launching in June. Because of the tariffs, we have had to move things around.
Well, thanks again. And thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org. And you can find us on Instagram at Winner's Bias. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. Help us reach our Camp KBU Summer Membership Drive goal of $50,000 before June 29th. You can go to kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but how you spread positivity across the table. Have a good one.
You are listening to